Human trafficking is one of the greatest human rights violations of our time. The demand for commercial sex fuels sex trafficking. National survey results by Demand Abolition show that up to 20% of adult males ages 18 to 64 have bought sex or would buy sex if the circumstances were right. 35% of men have searched online sex ads but failed to act on that desire. Data suggests that most men shop online ads during the workday, and many prostitution transactions take place on the way to work, during lunch, or after work. These are everyday activities done by everyday people. This is someone in the same job, in the same town, in the same community that we all live in. Human trafficking only exists because there is a demand that drives its existence. We can and must do something about it. Hello, everyone. My name is Helen Hofer, and I am the Freedom Drivers Project Director for Truckers Against Trafficking, or TAT. And you're listening to our podcast called Driving Freedom. My co-host today and my colleague is Louis Greek, a TAT training specialist. Hi, Louis.
Hi, everyone. As TAT works to educate, equip, empower, and mobilize members of the truck, bus, and energy industries to combat human trafficking as part of their regular jobs, we wanted to create a podcast that would serve as a helpful training tool to one of the largest mobile army of eyes and ears out there on the road seeking to recognize and report this heinous crime. Did you know human trafficking is a $150 billion a year criminal activity? With no buyer, there would be no victim. And so part of TAT's work to combat human trafficking is to address the root problem with the demand for commercial sex. Because if we can educate men on the dangers of purchasing commercial sex, how it leads to modern day slavery, then just maybe we can put a stop to this crime. Here with us today to talk more about the topic of demand and what we can do about it, especially as men, is my friend Alan Smith. Alan, tell us about your work in the anti-human trafficking movement.
Thank you, Louie and Helen. It's great to be here. It's an honor to be on this podcast with you. I'm really grateful for the work that you're doing. And I'm the executive director for a nonprofit agency called Saving Innocence. We're a Los Angeles-based agency working to recover and restore child victims of sex trafficking. My initial interest in it after working in a different nonprofit sector for 25 years. And it was time for a change, time to move on and do something different. And I started thinking, I'm not done with kids. Plus, I'm a dad with a daughter. And so I learned about Saving Innocence. I cold called them and I began to understand the scope of this problem that I really largely didn't understand at all before that. We're a 24-hour crisis response. We're partnered with law enforcement. When they recover what appears to be a child victim, a minor, then our on-call staff of rockstar case managers, dispatches, we're anywhere within LA County within 90 minutes on the scene, stepping into that relationship and helping to get that child everything that she needs in that moment and then for the rest of her life.
I remember I heard of Saving Innocence years ago. I worked for a different nonprofit who had some other interactions in LA. And so when I actually saw the red kite, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the same organization. So I love getting the chance to work with you guys again and hear more of kind of how you've grown in what you're doing. So talking about that, how does demand fit in? Why is that important? And how does that relate to your work?
To me, demand is everything. And there are lots of really important facets to the remedy of this and housing issues and aftercare and all the various things that a lot of great people are doing. But it all starts with demand. It's the manifestation of good old-fashioned capitalism, of supply and demand, profit and loss, a customer and a product. If there were no customers, there is no product. And that's true. That's business 101. If everyone stopped buying the smartphone, the company that made it would quit making it. It's that simple. If there's no buyers, there's no product. And sadly, I hate to refer to this reality and this crime as in those terms, those business terms, but that's really what it is. It's economically driven. Money knows no master. It's irrespective of geography and it's irrespective of all the outside normal conditions that would affect the business market. This is supply and demand. If there's no product, meaning there's no demand, it will cease to exist.
So when I was growing up, I watched movies like Rambo or James Bond and John Wayne and really had this idea in my head of the definition of what a man was. And I think that even carried on to my careers in the military and law enforcement. but I'm really not too sure if the dose of masculinity that I received growing up was very authentic. Could you talk a little more about the definition of what it means to be a man or that authentic masculinity?
We're getting down to where the rubber meets the road. This crime is predominantly carried out by men. Now, there are women involved at every portion of this crime as the buyers and the sellers and certainly the victims, but the largest percentage by far, most of the buyers are men, most of the sellers are men. And so to have a conversation about what authentic and powerful and healthy masculinity looks like, that's really everything. When my son was little, I got together with two of my close buddies and we had this exact conversation. What is a healthy man? What is an authentic man? What is a good picture of masculinity? Because we wanted to pass that on to our young sons. And so we began strategizing and brainstorming and read some books. We thought, what is a man? Is a man defined at a certain age? What is it, 18 or is it 21? Does a man become a man based on certain accomplishment or education? Is it the first time he has sex? Does that make him a man? That's what popular culture would lead you to believe, something along those lines. And so we came up with our four-pronged definition, our working definition of what a healthy masculinity looked like. And we began teaching our sons that and drilling it over and over and over. And the four prongs that we came up with, our working definition is that a real man accepts responsibility. A real man leads courageously. A real man lives a life of service, and a real man understands that who he is more important than what he does. And we thought if we could teach our boys to live those out, to practice those, to celebrate instances when they achieved those throughout their childhood, then we would have a fighting shot, or better put, they would have a fighting shot of being a healthy, authentic man, the kind of man that brings healing and positivity into the world rather than the examples of manhood that we're seeing played out in our society now, the kind of manhood that brings pain and suffering and oppression into the world. So that was our working definition. And I would invite your listeners, have this conversation, have it with your friends, have it with your sons. What is the definition of a man? What does it look like? And if we could begin building those concepts into our young boys and our young sons from a young age, they will be able to then tell the difference between counterfeit and real life over and over and over again. And I feel like that's my responsibility as a dad, to teach my son how to be a man, the right kind of man.
I read one of the chapters you sent us, and I loved the example of your friend who works to identify counterfeit money. Like, how do you learn to identify something that's counterfeit? You know, because you've studied the real thing and you know what that looks like. I love that example. And this conversation just makes me so excited. I want to like jump up and down. It is, especially as a woman, I'm going to try not to cry, but as a woman hearing men say that, it means so much. And so I just want to say thank you to you too.
You mentioned that we sent you a chapter. So later this fall, hopefully, we're making some publishing decisions, but I've written a book with some survivors of sex trafficking, which Louis actually contributed to, and he has his definition of a man in there. And it's a book focused on men. And I'm quoting in the book what you just referenced, my good friend Brody, who's been a Secret Service agent for some 25 years. And, you know, the day job of Secret Service agent when they're not protecting important people is they break up counterfeit currency rings. And I asked him about that. He said, when we do our training to discover a counterfeit, 90% of our time is spent studying the real thing, studying the authentic bill and currency. And when we do that, we become intimately aware with the real thing, then that means we can spot counterfeit 100 miles off. And so if we can teach our young boys to study 90% of the time what an authentic, real man and healthy, authentic masculinity looks like, then they'll be able to spot the counterfeit 100 miles off. And the counterfeit shows up in popular music, in media representations of men, and some of our biggest stars, whether it's hip hop music stars or athletes or movie stars or politicians, fill in the blank, the counterfeit destructive masculinity continues to show up in their face. So it's our responsibility as men, as dads, to teach our boys to understand the difference. One of the biggest pits and landmines that men stumble into, and I know women are participating in this, but if we're talking to men right now, is the landmine of pornography. The biggest problem we could fall into is thinking, okay, I didn't buy a person for sex today. I didn't buy a child for sex today. So I'm good, right? No. There's a lot of other things that us as men can stumble into that will feed this ugly beast. One of which, maybe the largest contributor to exploitation of women and children, is that of pornography. What I've learned over the last couple of years in writing this book and talking to some people that studied this topic in-depthly is that not some, not many, but actually most of the women that you see portrayed in pornography are there against their will. They're being coerced in some way, and in some ways even experiencing a form of trafficking while they're there. There's a number of quotes from survivors that will tell you that they were filmed while being raped, while being trafficked, and that film has made it into a pornography website of some kind. And so, men, is this really what you want to be about? You really want to subscribe to some service or log on to some porn site and see someone literally being raped in a violent way, and that's going to somehow satisfy you? Come on, guys, you're better than this. We're better than this, men. This is not what you were created to do. This is not what you're supposed to do. Let's bring healing. Let's not bring damage and pain.
Louis, I'd love to toss this question to you. What has been your journey in seeing counterfeit masculinity and understanding what authentic masculinity is?
Growing up, I think some of those influences that you see, especially when Alan talked about media or movies, and you see this stoic man there and nothing bothers him, you know, he doesn't let his emotions show, and get this impression that a man can't express their emotions, or a man's got to be sometimes the violent protector. And I feel that gets very confusing. And, you know, you hear men in the ways that they use terms or they use words to describe women that can be very degrading, very dehumanizing. For example, those James Bond movies, and you have the Bond girl there. A lot of young men are infused with that counterfeit or that toxic masculinity that then kind of stems up to later in life and comes out in those relationships. And my dad did a great job, I think, in regards to teaching me some excellent morals and values. But again, he only taught me what he learned from his father. And so to Alan's point, you know, I think we need to go a step further, because if my father didn't tell me about some of these dangers, especially in regards to purchasing commercial sex, then, you know, I'm not going to make those right decisions. I'm not going to protect women, and I'm not going to teach my son to do the same thing. And I think that I've later was able to discover that in particular male influences in my life and female influences in my life in regards to how we should be treating women. It took me a while throughout my life, and it's still something that I'm continually learning in regards to identifying where that counterfeit masculinity is and really attaching myself to other like-minded men that really try to enforce that positive masculinity. Alan, you know, with all the uncertainties that are going on right now, especially in 2020, what can we do about human trafficking, especially for those male listeners and regarding to demand? What are the most important things that fathers, husbands, brothers, uncles can really do to put a stop to this crime?
Yeah, that's a great question, Louis. I look at it and I think about it in maybe kind of three different levels. I think about kind of the micro level, and that's any big problem that you see out in the world, out in society, we have to first start with ourselves. We have to look in the mirror and we have to make that change, which we hope to see out in the world. We have to make it within ourselves first, in the micro level, in my home, in my marriage, with my children, and then bring in a friend or two along the way. And so we just talked a little bit about the dangers of pornography. That would be a thing that I would have to deal with right now in my life first. But it's more than that. What are the jokes? What are the conversations that you participate in? What about on a Friday night? Are you going to a strip club of some kind? Things that don't seem on a grand scale, but we have to change our life and look internally at what we're doing first. And we have to align ourselves with the greater desire and need to end exploitation and abuse in this way. That's the micro level, look in the mirror. The macro level, I think of it in terms of the big picture, legislation and education, prosecution. As a society, we have to pass more stringent laws. Let's dream up some excruciating penalties for buyers and the sellers. I bet we'll get rid of some of the buyers right then and there, but not all of them. We have to enact all kinds of legislation, education at a lower level, and all of those kinds of things. And so what that means is we have to vote people in. It becomes a litmus test, a condition of their employment at whatever level, whether it's just a local, a state, a national level. We have to look and see. I'm looking personally, when I hear debates and I see campaign promises and I see actions, I want to see things that line up with ending the exploitation of women and children in their party platform, in their speeches, in their debates, the things that they're going to do. And then I'm going to keep a close eye and make sure that they do it. I actually think that I have the ultimate solution. It sounds kind of crazy to say, kind of bold, but I actually do. Admittedly, it's going to take a long time to see the results, which means we have to start yesterday. The ultimate solution is to live a life in such a way that honors, serves, and protects women. Live it out loud. Live it every day. Call other men into it. One house at a time, one neighborhood at a time, one city at a time, one state at a time, one country at a time. And eventually, if we can get enough men to change the paradigm, there's an actual paradigm, there's a construct that us men were born into. It's been reinforced by all the media messages. It's been reinforced by all the rich, powerful people. It's been reinforced that women are really no more than something that is disposable, something to be used for a man's purpose and pleasure, and she's actually subhuman. That's the message that our young girls are getting. That's the message that our young boys are getting. We have to change that one man at a time to live a life that honors, serves, and protects women. That's the ultimate solution to this mess that we're talking about. It's going to take a while, so let's back it up and get some laws and legislations in place. Let's keep going. Let's shut down all the websites and let's shut down all the social media that's exploiting women and children. Let's do all that stuff. But until we line up and we look in the mirror, willing to have an honest conversation with ourselves and our close friends, we're fighting a losing battle.
Alan, you talk about cultural shift as being that ultimate solution. Like if we can choose to treat women with respect, if we can choose to say that not only am I going to treat the women in my immediate circle with respect, but I'm going to acknowledge that in each person, whether I know them or not. But that can seem like such an overwhelming ultimate solution. How do you kind of face that and know that this is a solution that is feasible, that we can accomplish?
I've seen it up close. I've seen examples of both. I've seen the tragic results. And then I also have seen in my travels, I've seen good, healthy men loving their wives, loving their children, laying their life down figuratively and maybe literally if called upon, but laying their life down on behalf of a healthy family and a healthy community and a healthy neighborhood. And I've seen the results of that. I've seen young girls turn into healthy, vibrant, strong women taking on the world. And then you trace that back. And almost always, in my experience, you see a healthy, strong man who has encouraged them as a dad, loved them, reminded them, taught them to know the difference between counterfeit and authentic. And now they're soaring and flying on their own. And by the way, not only will we abolish buying and selling of people, otherwise known in the adult sectors as prostitution or child abuse for minors, we'll solve a lot of societal ills. We'll solve a lot of problems if we can get men to live stronger, healthier, one man at a time, like I said earlier. It's doable. Now, women are a big part of this. Of course, it's not in any way to demean the idea that a woman has her own strength. Absolutely. But men have lived in such a way where it's been oppressive and violent oftentimes. And that's what we want to end and give women a chance to be all that they can be and should be and need to be in this society. And if we can do that, it's going to be a different podcast. We're going to be celebrating great stories rather than talking about the pain and suffering.
Yeah. Talk about oppression, right? Removing those roadblocks. There's a movement to legalize prostitution or to fully decriminalize it, where brothel owners, buyers have free rein to sell another person. And so how does that impact the work of trafficking?
That's a great question. I know it's a topic that is in the sort of national conversation right now. When this question came to me about a year or so ago, I started asking colleagues and coworkers and friends of mine, they were those young women being bought and sold. And they said exactly what I would have thought, that this is insanity. For those that have grown up being exploited and bought and sold, the fact to completely decriminalize every facet of it makes no sense whatsoever. It's going to increase the market. Therefore, the demand is going to increase. And every time you have adult, quote, prostitution, and I say quote because it's not really a word that we use very often because it is has a derogatory sense. It conveys a sense of choice, and there's really seldom a choice, or at least a real choice. But because that's kind of a legal definition that your listeners will be familiar with, anytime there's adult prostitution, it goes hand in hand with child exploitation, child trafficking. They're one and the other. It's like the minor leagues, if you will, in baseball. It's the farm system to grow them up. So if you're going to completely decriminalize and send pimps and brothels with complete impunity, they're going to need more, quote, product. Again, that business term. They're going to need more women, mostly, to satisfy the need. We're trying to decrease, in fact, eliminate the exploitation and abuse of these people as they're being bought and sold like a product, not increase it, fully decriminalizing it. And again, I was never exploited in that way. So somebody can come at me and say, what do you know? I'm going off the information that I've been given by many, many, many who have actually have that lived experience. I don't see how it makes any sense whatsoever.
Right. Who are we protecting in that circumstance, right? Are we protecting someone who feels that they have to make that choice because they have no other economically viable options? Are we protecting the person who has been and is continuing to be abused? Or are we protecting the person who wants to make money, who wants to be sexually satisfied?
Well, and if you think about it, like fully decriminalizing all of prostitution, another way of saying that is we're legalizing the buying and selling of vulnerable people. Say that out loud. The buying and selling of vulnerable people. That's what we're legalizing. And we're creating a government entity to basically be the pimp and take a little percentage of that money as it's happening.
Talk about the other macro level solutions. Like, oh, are we going to provide more resources for people who are economically unstable, people who are vulnerable? What if we provided those resources as opposed to saying like, oh, here's your option to be prostituted by someone else? To support these efforts to end demand, TAT has created a whole slew of tools you can use and share. We have the Addressing Demand man-to-man video and discussion guide, as well as the demand page on our website with stories of men who've taken a stand and are speaking out against the demand for sex trafficking. You can check out those resources on the demand page of our website. We'll list that in our show notes, as well as the page for Saving Innocence, so you can check them out at savinginnocence.org. And so to everyone out there who is TAT trained or wants to be TAT trained, may we keep our eyes and ears open and be ready to take action, with vulnerable populations more at risk than ever. By doing so, you are helping to end modern day slavery and drive freedom.